Welcome Mystikers and Mystikers on Mystikers.co podcast, and do not forget, there is nothing like failure. My name is Flo, like Florian. For the last 10 years, I've been setting up startups from Colombia to Georgia through France and Dubai. Going from mobile applications to websites and automation SaaS solutions, with always a French touch of digital marketing. After struggling in a lot of aspects and after learning from my own mistakes, I decided to help other entrepreneurs by sharing more stories, learnings, and experiences. Mystikers.co is the weekly podcast where I'm doing the interview of entrepreneurs worldwide. Our main goal is to share their learnings and experiences by commenting their own failures and stories. Far from being an easy task, it will take us through the big and small startups, from single entrepreneurs to bigger companies. If you're looking to solve your current problems by learning from others, this podcast is made for you. So join us on mystikers.co, and you can also find us on the main podcast platforms like Spotify and iTunes. And don't forget, subscribe to our newsletter to receive the freshest information. And keep in mind, there is nothing like failure. Hello Mystikers and Mystikers, today we are having the chance of interviewing Andrew. Andrew, who happened to be one of the first person who worked with us on Mystikers.co, and much more than that. Andrew was the CMO at Yadik.com, and he will be discussing with us today the rise and fall of Yadik.com, how he helped the company to go from not much to one of the biggest websites in the Middle East, and what happened toward the end. How could he explain the rise and the fall of what used to be one of the biggest websites, Yadik.com? Andrew, good afternoon.
Hello, Florian. How are you doing, man? Thank you for having me on the podcast. I think it's really important that we discuss our failures openly, and we have a culture that celebrates failure in San Francisco, and the rest of the world needs to catch up. If we celebrate failure, we can learn from it, and then we can not do it again, so we get closer to success.
And this is exactly why we've been looking forward having you on the podcast. It's been a complete challenge, by the way, to get the time and the tools to record you for the podcast, but I'm more than happy to do it. Yeah. Andrew, before we start, maybe I can introduce yourself to the people listening to us today.
Absolutely.
You're known for being one of the growth hacker experts in the marketing industry. You've been working and helping three companies to grow from nothing to $2 million exit in Dubai and the Silicon Valley. For all those projects you've been doing with low or no budgets. And recently, if I'm right, you've been working to release the Chrome application from Tinder and Match Group, right?
That's correct, yeah. So basically 13 years in early stage startup marketing. And what that means is I'm used to building companies without big advertising budgets. So most marketers nowadays are leaning on Facebook ads and Google ads to grow a business. I know how to do PR, SEO, app store optimization, a lot of the organic marketing. I also do paid ads for companies when they scale to be much larger. But the key differentiator for me versus other marketers, and why I like to use the term growth hacking, is I build growth when we don't have resources to build growth in paid advertising. So that's why I say growth hacking.
And this is exactly one of the reasons I wanted so much to get you on the podcast. We got the chance of attending one of your talk in Dubai, and you came with so many like concrete advice that we can actually activate, and some of the things we've never thought about, even though it's been like for my side over 10 years that I'm doing marketing. You really have an interesting experience. You really have a very nice way of seeing the digital marketing and the opportunities online. And I'm more than happy to get 1 hour with you to discuss all of that.
Yeah.
Andrew, before we start, I would like to know a little bit more about yourself. Tell us, I mean, are you coming from an entrepreneur family? Are you coming from a different background? How can you explain that you're today doing marketing?
Yeah, it's funny you should ask that. So both of my parents are entrepreneurs. I've never had a job interview or a CV. My mom owned a clothing line that made pants for men and women when they were like college age. And my father's been in the jewelry business his entire life. So definitely come from an entrepreneurial background. I've always really felt comfortable in the entrepreneurial environment, which a lot of people are scared of, you know, no set income coming in and, you know, working for yourself and building a business that takes maybe years to become profitable. So comfortable in that environment. But I honestly never really saw myself as an entrepreneur until recently. I've really been focused and obsessed with just marketing and growth and analytics. And, you know, being an entrepreneur is so much more than just marketing. It's sales, it's fundraising, it's HR, human resources. A lot more interpersonal communication goes into it than just being excellent at marketing and growth and creative advertising.
Which is true. And by the way, so having both parents entrepreneurs, how did you feel this at the kids? Were you used of having some months with money, some months without money for the family? Did you feel your parents impacted, you know, by the ups and downs of the activity? How did this happen to you?
So I think that it's really good having examples from your parents to teach you about being an entrepreneur, but I never really thought I was going to go down that path. In college, I went for general business and I wasn't really sure what I was going to do. I had my first business in high school doing auto detailing, but I think that once I started to travel, I started to see that internationally startups weren't really as focused as they were in the US. So I was able to add a lot of value, not just as with my marketing experience, but also with that entrepreneurial hustle, definitely.
And where did you grow up with your parents? Did you grow up in the same place or you got the chance of traveling from an early age?
Yeah. I grew up in a small town in Ohio. Definitely didn't have access to travel. Nobody in my family really likes to travel. It's very simple hometown place. People like their family and their small business. And if you have a thriving small business and a good family, there's really no need for more than that. So when I started traveling after college, then I got out of the country and I started to learn that there's more out there than just America. And nowadays, when I go back to the United States, I only go to California, really. The rest of the United States is not as innovative and as focused on solving world problems as San Francisco and Los Angeles. But most of the time, so about half the year, I'm a digital nomad. So I work from my laptop. I'm in South Africa right now. Next week, I'm going to be in Turkey. Morocco, then Israel, then Turkey. So I travel a lot, just like you, Florian. I think that once we realized, you know, like the places where we come from, the cost of living is so expensive, we can go with our laptop and be anywhere and save a lot of money and reinvest that into our own businesses.
And by the way, do you have any recommendation for any digital entrepreneur listening to us today?
Yeah.
Any website, any podcast you like?
As far as like reading and stuff for an entrepreneur, I really love the book Traction. Is a great marketing book that goes over all the different 19 different channels for growing your business. I think that's a really good book. I can't remember the author's name off the top of my head. Beyond that, I mean, I don't really subscribe to, even though I have an online course myself, I believe most of them out there are just scams and they're not really selling you actionable strategies. That's why in my course, I focus on teaching, not theory, not how to be an entrepreneur, but actual strategies that you can implement and for growing your business without a paid budget. But I'll talk about that later. But I think like I really love the entrepreneur subreddit on Reddit. So if you have questions about being an entrepreneur, I was actually just trending on the front page of that a couple of days ago. 500,000 entrepreneurs around the United States, mostly around the world, really. I mean, I talked to a guy off there in China today. But I recommend that for bouncing ideas off of other entrepreneurs. There's also a startup subreddit that I find really valuable for if you're a startup founder and you want to go ask some questions and get some real feedback from other people in the trenches. That's really good too.
So yeah, for digital nomad, you say Reddit can be one of the good places to start digging to get more information and see a bit. How is it?
Yeah. There's definitely been a lot of people who've started their business, their startup while being a digital nomad, because you can reduce your cost of living and you can reduce your commute. So you can wake up, bust open your laptop, put in 12 hours a day if you want, and still have a healthy, active lifestyle if you're walking to the gym or, you know, cooking for yourself at home. So being the digital nomad is a good thing, especially because you can go to places where you don't know anybody, so you have less of a social distraction. You know, like if you're in, I found that to be one of the biggest problems in San Francisco when you're actually living there is starting a company, but there's like amazing events and nightlife and people that have parties and birthdays and celebrations and hackathons and all kinds of things that take your time.
And as a digital nomad, Andrew, do you have like 3 tips you would like to share with the people listening to us when it comes to, you know, reducing your lifestyle and start traveling with it? Any 3 actionable advice that people could eventually use for them?
Yeah, definitely. So I think the biggest thing for becoming a digital nomad, the first thing is to realize, could you really do it, right? So you need to realize it's not just being on the beach, it's actually work. I work almost 70 hours a week, but my work is emails, Skype calls, and, you know, proposals and in building Facebook campaigns and writing SEO documents and you know, so it's not like it's what I love. So I don't actually feel like I'm working very hard, but you need to figure out if you could actually do that. There's nobody here waking me up at 9 a.m. I don't have to be in an office. It's very difficult to motivate yourself and you have to put the time in. I get messages from clients at 11 o'clock at night and I work until 1 a.m. sometimes instead of watching. I don't watch Netflix. I never, you know, I don't have a lot of the bad habits that other people have. I've been living out of a carry-on bag for 6 months. So not even a full suitcase. I just have like 5 shirts, 1 pair of shorts, 1 pair of pants, some workout clothes, and that's about it. A lot of people can't handle, I have 1 pair of shoes. A lot of people can't handle that, but I'm wearing slippers 90% of the time at home. So it's a give and take. The first thing is about balance and are you motivated and do you want to do it? The second thing is, how can you get employed? So it depends on what you're doing. You need to have either savings if you're building your own business and you need to have money saved up to where you can go and you can, you know, be frugal enough to live off that, or can you earn an income remotely? So are you good enough at what you do that you can offer it remotely for less money than you would make if you were in the office? That's the best place to start. And then the third thing is, you know, like, are you the kind of person that won't get too lonely being by yourself? I mean, dating is quite difficult as a digital nomad. You know, you're not going to have a travel partner normally. I mean, I have sometimes, but that usually doesn't last as long as you would if you were living in the same city. Travel is difficult. The work life is difficult. You tend to stay indoors a little bit, you know, with this job. You obviously go to coffee shops, you work at the beach, whatever, but work comes first. So sometimes that means waking up really early and working a full day. So I think money, relationships, and could you really do it?
I like it. Money, relationship, and could you really do it? I think it's a great tips. And with the experience I have from my side, I can completely relate to the 3 elements you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Andrew, would it be possible to ask you one big favor for the people listening to us today?
Sure, go ahead.
Will it be possible for you to send us, and we'll display it on, and we'll put it on Instagram and of course the website, a photo of your suitcase?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's actually a custom-made suitcase. I'm glad you asked. It has my logo and my own picture that I took out the window of a plane on it. So it's a company in San Francisco called You Go Bags. They customize luggage and, I thought they were really cool.
So, yeah. I will be more than happy to promote them on the website again. Andrew, as an entrepreneur, which is the question that you're just tired of answering?
I get a lot of people asking me how do I travel the world and work at the same time? And then I spent time making a course and then nobody bought it. So I think that, I get tired of people thinking that it's easy to just all of a sudden up and leave. And it took, you know, 10 years of me reducing my possessions, like disregarding materialism, loving travel, being very good at travel in the sense that I'm not a tourist. I like always am calm. I know where to go. I know where, you know, like I don't need emergency phone numbers and vaccinations and stuff anymore. I'm an expert. I've been to 85 countries. I'm pretty comfortable anywhere I go now. And So I get tired of people assuming that I'm just like this random guy traveling the world and I'm a millionaire or something.
It's true. It's true. And once again, if you have any tips that we can display on the, you can write on the blog, we'll be more than happy to share with the people listening to us today. Andrew, from 0 to 10, how weird do you think people see you?
Sorry, can you you say that again?
From 0 to 10, how weird do you think you are?
Weird in the sense like unique and strange, I'm probably a 10. I think that my lifestyle is completely different and bizarre to people, especially from where I come from. My family, nobody has passports. They never really even left our area, part of our city, let alone the country. And so I'm pretty bizarre there. But most people, I think, envy the lifestyle from the surface level. You know, like by the end of the year this year, I'll have been to 15 countries. And I'm, you know, like staying in 5-star hotels and enjoying my life. I'm not just working nonstop, but I am working a lot, but I'm doing what I love. So a lot of people are envious of that. But yeah, I would say I'm pretty weird. Like it take a long time to get here. And the first few countries I went to was very difficult and strange.
And I think it's great that you can share this experience, because especially from the people listening to MrCurse.co podcast, a lot of them are facing the same problems and wants to do the same. So it's good to get your experience shared on the podcast. And now it's going to take us through the main question we're trying to answer today with you is what happened to Yadik.com? Yadik.com was the Middle East Yelp, the first ever reviewing website in the region. And how did it happen that this website that became one of the leader in the region could fail?
Yeah, that's a good question. So first thing, it's called Yadig. Like it's a 1970s term from the US from like disco era where people be like, Yadig, do you dig it? Like you dig it. So Yadig, Yadig.com. Basically, I used to live in Dubai. I was head of marketing of two previous startups that had sold for millions of dollars. And I was looking for my next project. I was pretty much the most prolific marketer at the time for startups in the region.
Which are these?
The startups that had exited, one was called Dubizzle.com, Dubizzle. That's still around. That's the largest classified site in Asia outside of China. And the other one was GoNabbit, which was the Groupon of the Middle East, which was purchased by Living Social. And I was head of marketing there for a while as well. After Living Social, I wanted to go back to a new early stage startup. I wanted to start even earlier when the product wasn't even defined. And so I found a local Emirati guy who was half American. His mom was American, and he grew up in between the US and the UAE, which is very rare. And he realized that Yelp wasn't around in the Middle East, and we didn't have a culture of reviewing restaurants, and the service and quality is really bad in the region because there's no recidivism. There's no business, nobody going back to the businesses. They don't have to worry about their online presence. So he had an idea of publicizing that culture about reviewing businesses as a way to promote them or punish them if they're bad to you. And he, you know, he had some money behind him. He's a pretty wealthy guy. And so he hired me to come up with the branding, the messaging, help work on the user experience of the product, and then launch and scale the marketing. And that's usually what early stage startups do. They hire me when they have a little bit of data, they have a little bit of a minimally viable product, but they need to scale up and they need a marketer that knows how to do everything himself. So 13 years experience, obviously I can pull in outside consultants and dev help and design help, but
In 2000 and?
This was 2012. So I had already been in the industry for like 5 or 6 years. And I was adept at the early stage startup situation. So basically what we did was we started to launch some paid advertising, but small budgets because he's self-funding the project, which I can tell you if you're self-funding your project as well, do it, but get results quickly or iterate. Don't just keep paying and paying and going along the same thing. So before I had joined, he had had like 6 or 7 months where he was spending hundreds of thousands of dollars with no growth. And so he was already deep into the pockets before I got there. But anyway, so he was pulling the reins back on the budget. So I'm a growth hacker. That's fine with me if you don't have a budget. Let's focus on PR. Let's focus on SEO, which is bringing the website up on Google. And let's focus on partnerships, three things that only cost blood, sweat, and tears and don't cost any money for the business. So we invest a lot of time into that. And within 3 months, we were first page rank for over 60,000 businesses in the Middle East. So I did the SEO from scratch. We focused on real content marketing and keyword density and then link building there, which is basically what SEO is. And because of the content-rich reviews from users writing reviews, obviously it's really good for SEO. And then on top of that, we were able to have unique pages for each business. And if you think about it, if you go to Google, how many unique pages are there for the business? There's their website, their Facebook page, and then us. So we were able to come up really quickly, and we went from zero to 300,000 monthly unique visitors to the website. And then we focused on working on optimizing the product to get them to convert to signed up users and write reviews. So, but over the course of a year, I launched probably PR, giveaway, sweepstakes, events. We did events and parties where people would review. We had giveaway competitions for people writing reviews. We partnered with Rihanna, with the UFC, with other big brands that were coming to the region for promoting the website. We partnered with Groupon, getting our reviews to power reviews on their deals, et cetera, et cetera. By the end of a year and a half with the company, we had gotten really famous. For instance, I did some growth hacking around remarketing. If you're a founder who knows about remarketing, you know how powerful it is. But basically, it's once they see your ad, you can show your ad to them everywhere. And you can do it by geo. And Dubai is a small city of only 700,000 internet users, maybe a million or so now, but that's not that big. And I was able to show our ads everywhere on the days when people visited our website through PR. So you get a big article coming out, then people go to the website, check it out, they go away, then they see your banners everywhere. It makes you very famous. They automatically think that you're the biggest company, and it's not that expensive. We're talking a couple hundred dollars a month. So we got some investment interest. And meanwhile, this website is slow. We're still at MVP stage. We have a development team in Pakistan. It's just me doing all the operations and director stuff. The CEO is dealing with his main business. This is just a
So how many people were in the team when you joined them back in 2012?
One, just developers. Just like a team of four developers in Pakistan and one designer in Dubai. So the CEO is in the office about one day a week. He is just like a silent partner mostly, but it's his vision on the product, so he's still involved. So I join, we scale out the development, redevelopment, the iterations, and then I'm mostly a one-man shop on the marketing. Obviously, I have this internal designer that's helping me with a lot of the design stuff. So we're growing, we're scaling, but it's not super high quality traffic because it's people that are coming in for the mobile number or the email address of this spa or gym, and then they're going away. And so we're optimizing the product, and this is a long cycle. You know, you make a change, you check the data, you make another change based on the data, you keep going, you're going, you're going. That's how startups win. They never give up. They just keep iterating and iterating based on user feedback and analytics and what people are doing with your product. So, but we figured out we were stagnating at that 10% a month growth without paid ads. And so, you know, I tried to convince this founder to take on investment or invest more money himself, but we were spinning our wheels with trying to convince him to take on investment. So if you're a founder listening to this and you have plenty of money and you don't think you need to take on investment, you need to realize that there's other reasons besides funding. This is lesson number one from the project. Other reasons besides funding to take on investing are PR opportunities. If this is a world famous investor or a banner investor, it will impress the press and they can write about it. They'll start focusing on your project more. It will bring better talent. People within startup industry know that if there's a good VC on your project, the likelihood that it will succeed is higher. So people want to join a rocket ship that isn't going to fail like 90% of startups. So a good investor will bring this on. And then on top of all that, it's their advice and connections. So the investor that I'm thinking about had launched and sold like two or three startups already in the region. I get this founder in front of that investor, and basically he wasn't really impressed with what the big famous investor was trying to offer, because he didn't really need the money, but he didn't have the experience to recognize that it was getting this person on board, because this guy only invests in a couple startups per year. So to be one of those means that you get access to his whole network and talent and development and everything besides the marketing that we needed help with. So we didn't take on that investment, and I was told very clearly that I needed to continue with the growth hacking and get us to 1 million users before we went back to any investors. So I was frustrated, because there's no reason to think that 1 million is going to make us any more valuable than we already are. UAE is still and was very much so a very small pond for a big fish of a startup there. Now we've already had billion-dollar exits. It's a little bit different now, but at this point, 7 years ago, we were top five tech companies in the region, and we were only making
little money. So if you try to sum up for the listeners of the podcast, you join Yadig.com at a very early stage. You implement the three, one of the three main components of growth hacking, being like the SEO, the PR, and the partnership. Aside of doing lots of events to make sure that Yadig is the cool brand and get people out there, it took you how many months before you start getting the first real result in the growth? You mentioned like a 10% organic growth. How much time did it take you before it started?
First month. No. Yeah, first month, because we did a lot of SEO hacking. I mean, I don't want to go into technical stuff, but there were certain strategies that you can implement to make Google come and spider your website within one day. So we started getting rankings within even like first couple of days of rewriting the content and optimizing the site for speed and recategorizing the site pages. So we made it like Google's best friend, basically. I made it the website specifically to be Google's best friend. And then we started optimizing to keep them, we started having a pop-up that offered giveaways. So if you think about it, what kind of website has more access to free stuff from brands? Because I'm helping you drive your business. I'm not charging you anything. Every restaurant, spa, gym, nightclub, hotel, I had all their email addresses, and we would just email them and offer them to give away prizes to our user base. And so I had a viral engine going on the marketing, and really using like the giveaways to spur social media, the social media to spur more people signing up. And it was like a great funnel. So the growth happened very quickly. The point is, and what I'm getting to with the failure is like I said, lesson number one was, even though we were growing, we didn't take on investment. Lesson number two was working, you know, as an early employee, if you're not the founder and you're listening to this and you're an early employee or you're thinking about joining an early stage startup, you need to really focus on the founding team that you're going to be working with. When I say with, you're not working for anyone when you're joining in the first 5 to 10 employees. You're working with everyone as a team. And so you need to make sure that you're going to be able to learn from and learn with those founders as much as work with that product. The product is really important, but also the founder is really important. You need someone that has experience and has a background that lends themselves to this company being successful, not just having money. So that's another thing I learned from this project. So getting back to the story. So we've reached famous level. We have maybe 50% of everybody in the city visiting the website once in a while. The problem is that they're not all signing up on the website. They're coming and they're getting the mobile number. And now we have a sales team in the company that are going out and trying to sell sponsored listings, advertising on the website, millions of page views by now. And so we can make ad revenue. So we have a sales team that I bartered on commission only, and the sales team is going out and making these deals. We're starting to make money, but the growth is starting to stagnate, right? So any channel that you hack or organically hit, or even paid channels, eventually at some point there you will hit saturation point. So with SEO, we maxed out with what we could do. And the partnerships, there was no other big brands we could go to. The giveaways were running, but it's a review writing website. So the only people interested in the giveaways, they were UGC giveaways. So if you know what that means, it's a user-generated content giveaway, meaning people have to write something or create a piece of content to get entered in the giveaway. Only the people that like writing reviews are going to do that. So there's a saturation point with that. And so I went to the CEO and I said, you know, look, man, you need to relinquish 85% ownership of this company. He owned 85%. I was owning 10%. And I'll give away some of my percentage, but we need to go raise investment and we need to hire a really good development team from the US to come to Dubai. We need to get rid of this MVP development team that's having all kinds of crashes and UX bad things happening to our users. Not anything like security wise or anything, but like just bad user experience, page loading, 404 errors, things like you shouldn't have when you have hundreds of thousands of users. So he was not willing to do that. And he believed that we had more ability to get organic growth than we thought. So we went back to the drawing board for a few months. And then I told him, like, I gave him an ultimatum, like, look, I'm going to leave the company 2.5 years of hacking the growth. It's time now to become legitimate and spend money on advertising and build a real team. And he didn't believe me. And so I left the company, unfortunately. And 3 months later, the company had completely crashed. He closed down everything. To add the dramatic effect, he didn't post on Facebook to 600,000 Facebook fans, I believe. No, I'm sorry, 600,000 subscribers, 300,000 active users, 100,000 social media followers, and we didn't even put up a landing page saying goodbye. So it was a really big failure in the region, and there was even newspaper articles about it.
So for what we can understand of the discussion we have right now, you join the company, build the growth hacking tool, start the development of the growth process. After some points, you feel that you reach the maximum of the organic growth you can. As the owner, the main owner of the company is not willing to open up to more investments, you run out of cash to keep growing the company. And because of that, nothing really happened from the management side. No money were injected in the company. And after you left, the company just like collapsed.
Correct. Yeah. So a little bit of expansion on that. Basically, you know, a good marketer makes decisions based on data, not on your gut or your instinct. A good entrepreneur and CEO should definitely have that gut decision making, but you should be open to data, and you should always hire people that you know are smarter than you, and you should believe that those people are smarter than you at their individual job. If you spend a lot of money hiring a marketing expert like myself, and then you don't take the advice and the guidance of that marketing director, you're probably going to fail because you're wasting your time and your money by, you know, working with someone with so much experience if you're not going to let them lead that part of your project. Chief everything officer, you know, the best founders, they take out the garbage, they do HR, they do everything. But then when they have the resources to hire individual experts in each thing, that's how you get better as a company. So that's another thing that I learned from this, you know, like you shouldn't work with a founder that isn't going to utilize your entire tool, or you shouldn't be a founder. You shouldn't hire senior level people if you want to micromanage and you want to not let that person do their job.
So what triggered for you, you know, like this decision of leaving the company? Was it like, I don't know, one discussion you have with your boss, with the boss or CEO of the company? What did trigger, you know, for you this feeling of, okay, it's time to put an ultimatum. If nothing moves, I have to go.
Yeah, I think it was just data-based. I definitely didn't have anything against him personally. He's still a friend, and I think he's really good guy, and he was really talented at focusing on the user experience and rolling up his sleeves and getting involved. Like a lot of people, he would write support messages back to people when he would come in, and he would handle some social media stuff. And so with the time that he had, he was definitely very involved, and I really liked working with him, and I learned a lot from him. He was a very aggressive guy and talented at making deals, and so I learned a lot from him. It's just I realized once that we weren't going to go anywhere any further organically. We were already famous, so it was a perfect time to raise money. And I had a minority ownership, so I wasn't able to make the decisions for the business that I wanted to. And so I unfortunately had to choose either my time versus this company. And, you know, my life is obviously more important to me than somebody else's company. But I really, you know, I waited. We struggled the last 12 months with the company to grow it organically before I made that ultimatum. It wasn't like I was just disgruntled and said that. So no, I don't think we ever had a fight or anything like that.
So it was more for you like an ongoing feeling that nothing was moving on, and at some point you just say, okay, I can't keep on with it, and I need to move on.
Yeah, I would say it was already a sinking ship. When I left, but nobody else could realize that we were gaining water but me, because I have the most experience, right? So I was definitely feeling it for 12 months that, you know, like, we need better leadership. We need to bring on an advisor that has 10 or 15 years experience at the CEO level with companies, so that we know that. And that's what all these big tech companies do. Mark Zuckerberg brought on Sheryl Sandberg. Google brought on Eric Schmidt. All the biggest tech companies, they're young founders. Once they get to $1 billion big pond, big fish level for their small pond, then they need to bring on a better captain.
It's very interesting what you're mentioning, because you keep having traffic, you keep having traction, you keep having use of the website, but you're already feeling that there's something wrong, something thinking on the background, and this is when you start raising the flags, saying, hey guys, there's something wrong, let's do something, and the decision was not properly made.
Yeah, let me give you another instance. You know, like, so after this project, I moved to San Francisco, where 75% of all the tech investment in the world is in this one city. It's the only place in the world where everywhere you go, someone is a founder or an employee of a startup. Everybody is focused on user experience, focused on creating value for users and changing the world. So what would have happened if Yadig was in Dubai is this: we would have gotten that initial traction up to those hundreds of thousands of users. We would have gone and probably raised money, giving up 10 to 25% of the website, of the ownership. But we would have raised probably with that much. I mean, in Dubai, we were still going to raise probably $2 million. But if we were in San Francisco, it would have been like 10 to 15 million, maybe 20 or something. I don't know. But it would have been a big A round, because he already seeded it himself. So we would have raised that money. We would have built out a team and bought ourselves 2 years of focusing on the product without having to make money. What you do when you do that is you impress users so much, because it's free. You're not trying to sell any advertising yet. You're not trying to downgrade the user experience for the sake of making money. That's why companies take on funding, is so that you can buy that runway to make a better product for your users, so you have enough value to charge them later on, or you have enough user base to charge advertisers later on. So that's what Facebook did. That's what every company's done. I mean, even Yelp, they weren't generating revenue until they were about like 10 years old or something, I think. And a lot of these companies, you know, it's a long-term vision. So it was really unfortunate when Yadig went under, because I felt like we did a lot of that hard work already. 90% of startups fail before they even get to the point of having an opportunity to speak to an investor or raise money, you know what I mean? So we had an investor ready to invest up to $200,000, I believe, with us, and that would have enabled us to stay alive much longer. And like I said, we paved the way for education for the region, and then a second mover came in with budgets. They raised a lot of money, and they didn't have to spend money on education for the user base. People understood the value of reviews, so they came in and they focused on just promoting the product and spending a lot of money on advertising, and they took over the entire region. They're even in the United States now.
That's very interesting what you mentioned. You know, it's like first build a product, get users to use the product, and if there is no business model straight correlated to the users, like, get money to make sure that you can keep developing a product that people love. It's a very interesting way of doing it. Mm-hmm. And From the project you've been working with, like you mentioned, one few other big companies such as Dubizel, which other business you worked with were going through the same approach than Yadig?
So you mean like with the same kind of marketing?
Like the same path. You know, it's like you have the user growth, you have the website keeps getting more traction. But it's time to raise money, like, to make sure that the website stays free for a longer time. So do you have any other example, you know, that you could implement the same strategy?
Of course. Yeah. So with Dubizel, the first startup exit I was at, the founders were very focused on quality and user experience more than anywhere I'd ever worked before, or maybe even since then. So they were raising money to be able to keep in building the development team because they wanted to just have the best possible product. So they raised a little bit of money right when I joined, and then they hired me as their head of marketing. And that money that they had raised was enabled them to get that talent and build out that team. Then once the product was amazing, they, instead of taking on more investment, they started hiring very talented advertising salespeople and have that talented development team build advertising units onto the site, right? So unique advertising opportunities at the time that really weren't available anywhere else in the region, and targeting options that weren't available. Facebook ads wasn't around yet. So interest level targeting for the amount of user base that they had but the growth definitely happened even at Dubizzle from SEO, from PPC, and from PR, those, and like social media and social networking. That was pretty much the main growth strategy. There was a lot of in-person and event stuff too. We even did like growth hacking in the sense where we sent photographers to nightclubs and they handed out business cards for the website saying, see your pictures tomorrow on dubizzle.com. And then we get people to go and then they'd see that how good of a product the website was, and they would convert and sign up because it was a free tool. So definitely if we had had better leadership at Yadig and we had had a long-term vision from the founders, then we would have been able to do the exact same thing that Dubizzle did, because Dubizzle was 5 years old before or 4 years old before I even joined and scaled it. And then we sold a year later. So this company, Yadig, had been around for like 6 months or a year before I had joined. So you need a founder that has really long-term vision and isn't afraid to continuously change things and iterate to get there.
And it's, as a founder myself, I can completely agree with what you're saying. It's not that simple, you know, to find the right people, the right team, to meet the objectives, you know, with the constraints you may have of finding the right people, having the right people, finding the sales, the team, the marketing, like so many things to properly handle. So people of experience definitely make a difference when it comes to hiring the right person. So you joined Yadig, you spend with her like a few, how much time did you spend with her? Like 1.5 years, 2 years?
Two and a half years.
So God, after 2.5 years, you leave Yadig. Yadig and closed like soon after you left it, and now it will take us to the learning of this experience. Like now that you've been doing this happened like about 6 years ago, four or five years ago. So yeah, almost six. Yeah. So what learning are you still carrying on with you after this experience?
Yeah. So like I said, I think the biggest learning from this project was that picking a founder is as important as picking an investment. If you're going to invest your entire life in this person, right? Because like you said, these projects can take up to 10 years. So you need to really be ready to be working with that person. And that person is steering the ship that you're betting your life on for a long time. So, you know, I learned a lot and I obviously launched a lot of interesting campaigns and did partnerships and met a lot of great people from working this company. So it's not all lost. Like I carried the strategies that I learned there onto the next company. The very next company I joined, I worked at for another 2.5 years and we sold that company for $10 million. So we exited that business. And then since then I've been a successful consultant. So everything, failing is just as important as winning because you're learning so many things. And I think the main learning from this was that if you're not the founder, you need to really be impressed by the founder's vision and the talents that they bring to the table and their ability to steer the ship. And as a founder, I think the lesson from this is that you take on funding even if you think you don't need it. You're a fool to not want to take on any funding unless you are making money hand over foot and you don't even need to take on any advisorship or get PR and your marketing machine is happening. If you're not making money, then you need to take on investment.
So for you, the main two lessons for them: get investments to make sure you can keep building a product that people love, and be cautious with the team you're going to join, from the founder with a long-term vision to a team of talented people to manage the different aspects of the development of the startup or whatever project you're working on. Is there any third lesson you would have got from this experience with Yadig.com? is there any third lesson
Sorry?
You may get from this Yadig experience apart from the investment and the team?
Yeah, I think a third lesson is probably third lesson. Let's see. No, I'm you know, like I said, I think I learned from this later on in life that there's no such thing as failing. Obviously, I was really upset when I left the company, and then I was even more upset when they failed. You know, I still wanted them to succeed even after I left. I just wasn't willing to put in any more of my life with that leader. But I think that I thought that it was a total waste in the beginning, but then you realize that there is no such thing as failure. I learned many things that then carried me to a better project. So actually, when I left Dubai after this, I went to San Francisco and I took 3 months purposely unemployed and I interviewed founders. So instead of just going for the first company that liked me, I felt like I needed to interview companies. And so I took my time, and that was the lesson from Yadig, and I picked a good company because we ended up having
an exit. So it's very interesting that you mentioned. It's like after leaving this one, so you started doing the interview of founders to see which one you'll be happy to join. Did you open any kind of website, or is it something you used to do like on a coffee or a bar, or how did this happen, the interview of founders?
Yeah, exactly. Basically, I would send an email. Here's me. Here's my background. This is what I'm looking to do. Tell me about yourself. And then we would talk on the phone. You know, the same as online dating. You start messaging, then you talk on the phone, then you have a date.
I love this way of contacting people. So it took you 3 months before you start finding people like you were feeling comfortable with.
No, I mean, you know, like 3 months from landing there. I met 40 companies in 3 months. So 40 companies, and I picked one, and then we ended up being the right decision. So I just rough guesstimate 3 months. It might have been like 50
days. That's very cool. I really love this way, you know, of doing things differently. And that's something that you show, you know, all the experience you share with us today. Andrew, we're gonna reach the end of the podcast. Is there anything, any message you would like to share with the entrepreneurs or people starting soon a project listening to us today?
Yeah. So, you know, at this point in my career as a full-time consultant, I don't work with companies unless they raise money. So I basically, you know, you raise a couple million dollars for your project. You've already built traction, and now you need somebody who knows how to launch and scale PPC, influencer, email, social, everything. But that unfortunately means that I'm not affordable for the early stage startups that are, you know, still at launch phase and figuring some things out about a need to test and build organic growth themselves. So last year I spent 6 months developing an online course that walks people through exactly how I build growth organically. So all the tools that I used to do SEO without having to pay a cent, there's a module in the course, 4 modules in the course, all about SEO, how to do your own PR, how to do your own email marketing, 25 different tool recommendations, how to do viral sweeps and giveaways. So if you're an early stage founder and you're listening to this and you don't have money to spend on paid ads, you're not going to find a marketer that is going to tell you there's plenty of ways to build traction without spending money. And unfortunately, you can't pay me to do it for you yet, but I have a course that for $1,000, it will teach you how to do everything yourself. And I do monthly payments. I'll give you a discount if you go through Mistakers. Mistakers has an exclusive discount that they can give any of the listeners to this podcast. You can message Florian about more info about that. But I highly recommend it for anybody that needs to build traction for like 3 to 6 months on their own. And this will build you the traction you need to go impress investors and take on that money and then scale your business. 90% of startups fail in the early phase because they don't have that traction. They spend a little bit of money on paid ads. It doesn't work. They blow their runway and they go out of business. So I don't want to see that happen for you. So
Andrew, your main advice would be like focus on growth hacking with the right tools, the right advice, and the right people.
Absolutely. Like even before your product is launched, you need to start your marketing. So you need to be going on social. You need to be building your PR list, not messaging them yet, but building the emails of the press and reporters that you want to reach out to. You need to be lining up partnerships, you know, guest post content marketing. You need to be launch get ready to launch everything. So that starts before. You don't start when the product is ready. So that's I nice. Teach all and, of that in my course.
And people can get the offer you mentioned on mystickers.co/Andrew. So if you're interested to know more about the course, the different tips from Andrew, and get access to a one-to-one session with Andrew, feel free to visit mystickers.co/Andrew, and the link will be available on the blog post related to the interview. Andrew, it was a pleasure of having you on the podcast, especially knowing like it's been weeks and almost months that we're trying to get you here and, you know, trying to fit in your busy agenda.
Yeah, two digital nomads, bad internet. That's
the main issue we had. For the people listening to us, we try to catch up each other for at least in doing at least like five different countries. And we finally got the combination of country between Georgia and where you are again, sorry, Andrew? Johannesburg.
I'm in Johannesburg,
Andrew, thanks
South
for your
Africa.
Time. And if people are trying to want to follow up with you with any website, any social media, they can get access?
Yes, so I'm Andrew Startups. So it's andrewstartups.com. It's Instagram, Andrew Startups, Facebook, Andrew Startups, Twitter, Andrew Startups, LinkedIn, Andrew Startups. So find me, message me, and hope to help you succeed in the future.
And
thanks, Florian.
We see our listeners again next week with a new interview. This was Andrew sharing with us his experience as the Yadig marketing manager. Will go from almost a new company to hundreds of thousands of daily users until the end of Yadig a few years ago. Andrew, once again, thanks for your time, and people will be happy to find you on your different social media. Bye-bye, and see you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this new episode of Mystickers.co. If you did, please share the podcast with your friends and fellow entrepreneurs. And if you wanna help us to do better for you, don't forget to visit us on mystickers.co. We see you in a week for new interviews. And do not forget, there is nothing like failure.